Hello, everybody. Welcome to the post game patrons. Thank you so much for supporting us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, episode 45. I am very proud of that episode 45. You know, you want to do well on the Michael Jordan numbers.
That's
a
true.
lot of podcasts don't understand that, but that's really important. Those are very important milestones. And that was a show that I think like Michael would have been really proud of, frankly.
Oh, for sure.
You know, getting the Clerk hagiography, dealing with that bullshit, and then you know, the Alabama conversation. So
talking about labor, man.
Yep.
And a little IQ debunk too.
That's right. That's right. I forgot all about
that.
It's
trifecta. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Oh,
we got a packed post game here.
And I'm
for
just
everybody.
Realizing that we're talking. The logo was appearing. People could hear us, but hey.
Well, I'm sorry to deprive you all of our beautiful faces,
our
but
faces,
we're here. yeah, we got a lot of stuff coming up. We're gonna talk about Beto in a little bit. University of Austin, be taking your questions. But before we get there, I mean, we actually have some pretty exciting news to start with, I think, before you even play this clip, if you're good with it, Matt.
Yeah, let's do it.
The John Deere strike, which has been going on for a while now, the UAW, has ended. Let me pull this up right quick for folks, because this happened when we were live. Which is why we weren't able to cover it.
Some really good news in the midst of talking about the endless money pit BlackRock trying.
And how difficult it is to sustain these kind of strikes either. Yeah. I mean, the one hope has always been, at least with this one, that it doesn't seem like John Deere had the appetite to hold out for a long strike. And that analysis turned out to be true. This is from Dave Jameson. Breaking, John Deere strike is over. Workers just ratified the latest tentative agreement by a spread of 61 to 39 per the union from the UAW. And let's talk about the goodies here. By a vote of 61 to 39%, UAW John Deere members ratified the agreement, which includes a payment of $8,500 signing bonus, 20% increase in wages over the lifetime of the contract with 10% of a 10% raise this year, return of cost of living adjustments, 3% lump sum payments, enhanced options for retirement, enhanced CIPP, performance benefits, and healthcare remains the same for the life of the agreement. So, I mean, a significant victory all the way through, one that not only is going to sort of help people out in the long term, but put money right back in their pockets after they sort of risk so much to go on the strike. So an incredible positive result from a company that's been extremely profitable over the past few years, that had been exploiting their workers at an extreme rate, not only with bad working conditions, but just if you look at the difference between the profits the company was making, what was going to the pockets of workers, that's hyper-exploitation. It's incredible to see people withholding their labor and getting the goods.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that's a good point, is because, you know, when you see news of leadership coming to a deal, it's always like, well, is this going to be a deal that the members are actually happy with? And to see, you know, a success is very nice, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't unanimous, but it was a pretty sizable amount of people who voted, yes on the deal. So we'll have to see, you know, over the next few days to see, you know, if there's anything that was missed, but from where we're sitting right now, it seems like it's a pretty positive result. If nothing else, it's like there's money on the one side, which is it's a very good sign.
Yeah, those sound like nice bonuses. And I mean, yeah, I mean, continuing to just make it a good company to work at, relatively speaking, right? Like, just the bare minimum. But of course, you know, we know the obstacles toward that. But with that said, yeah, so we have a woman here. I'm forgetting her name, and I just had it up. It is March, Miss March. It's not
Miss
a
March.
Calendar thing. It is. She's a politician from Virginia's, I believe. Yes, here it is. Mary March is an American restaurateur. So, like Lauren Boebert, of course.
Wonderful.
I don't know if she if Mary March has caused as much diarrhea as Lauren Boebert. That's one for the state health authorities. But Mary March is an American restaurateur and politician who is the delegate-elect for the 7th District in the Virginia House of Delegates. March, a Republican, defeated Democratic nominee businessman. There's a great set of words. Democratic nominee businessman. Look, like we said about the union buster that the truck driver who spent like $200 on a campaign beat. Like, we're in a season now. Those Democrats, sorry, you know, it's a shame you couldn't win your re-election, but see you later. March opposes, and not this is again, let's also make sure we emphasize the horrendousness of these Republican candidates, which is March opposes abortion and policies designed to protect transgender students at schools. March attended Donald Trump's rally on January 6, 2021, prior to the attack on the U.S. Capitol. She claims to have left before the riot began. I don't know why she would want to have done that. I mean, she'd stay there with the Patriots. But anyway, that said, she was sort of bamboozled onto a friend of the show, Chris James's new video prank show. You know, he's been doing the phone call pranks for a long time, you know, like 4 years ago doing Kurt Schilling, which is very funny. But now he's doing video pranks, and he got Miss March on, which is a fun thing to say, Mrs. March. And they talk about the John Deere strike, of all things, actually.
Mm-hmm. Let's get this.
I have a question in regards to national politics, though. Would you agree that socialism is one of the biggest threats to our country?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And what's the definition of socialism?
Oh, my goodness. The definition of socialism.
Like, what is it? What is it even?
Well, it's really, you know, government control, you know, utilizing cronyism.
Because there is a definition of it, right? I looked it up.
You go ahead and define it. So you must be prepared with the definition. Go ahead and define it for me.
It refers to the community as a whole owning the means of production. So it's a political and economic system where the community owns the means of production. Now, you are obviously a big pro working class. I get that from you, and I love that, and I think that that's important for anyone, regardless of what your political party is. And having said that, do you stand in solidarity with the striking John Deere workers, the working class workers as John Deere workers?
I believe in right to work. You know, I don't stand with the unions, if that's what you're asking.
Oh, that is what I'm asking. Oh, you don't stand with the unions. But the unions are fighting for working class people to get higher wages against people who are like, you know, corporate CEOs and people like that. So if you stand with the working class, why would you stand against unions who their sole purpose is to fight for more rights and higher wages for working class people?
So what group are you with?
You're not supposed to ask that.
I love that's a really fun thing to throw at though, because you can see like they don't have a lot of, like, I don't know how to say, amber over the talking points at this point. Like they mm-hmm. and so like they know that if the union stuff come up, you can't support the unions. And this is the same thing with Josh Hawley. Like, Josh Hawley will say, I support unions in theory, but in practice, they've just been too corrupt. And it's like, we got to figure out what the hell's going on with unions before we allow people to unionize, right? Like, that's the game. Because, like, it is really such a third rail for these faux populists. And, you know, honestly, like, I say this as somebody who, if these people were genuine, like we're talking about with Jacob, if these people were genuine in delivering for working people, it would be a fucking interesting calculus. If there was like a Republican squad who were like fascists, but also really supportive, like we could maybe have these debates that people seem to really want to have about like the right and the left, right? But like, this is where these people are at. This, like, even the Jan 6ers, right? They're like, I'm right to work. I stand against the unions, if that's what you're asking, right?
No, I mean, it just shows how the thing about conservatives, especially like Southern conservative politicians who try to do this kind of the working class song and dance, you realize how quickly the cultural like facade, like melts away the second we start talking about dollars and cents, right? The second we start talking about higher wages, et cetera, they're much less interested in the working class and much more interested in protecting the business elites, which is like, I don't know. I mean, that's how you have to find, I mean, that's where you have to confront them to push through the kind of BS, you know, Republican Party is a party of the working class smokescreen. I'll say, like, you know, culturally in the South, that's like, that's how they present themselves. It captures a lot of people. A lot of people's like kind of imaginations and conceptions. It certainly did mine when I was young. But you realize very quickly that, like, oh, well, they say they're for the working class, but they're against higher wages for workers. They're against unions. They're against your right to strike. They're against your freedom of speech on the shop floor. Yep. Right. So exactly what about the working class are they for? Just like trucks and camo? I mean, I like that shit well enough, but that doesn't pay the bills or take care of my family.
You know, right. Like, I mean, like, the aspiration is like, it's like a more, the more local oligarchs. It's like you want to get into a truck that's like a $60,000 truck instead of a $40,000 truck and go to the expensive part of town and like be with those people. Like that's who she, like, they
yachts, boats.
Exactly. Right. And again, she's a restaurateur, right? Like, this is who these people are.
Yeah, I mean, an industry that, like, preys upon low wages and, like, expendable workers.
Is having an existential crisis because of this, the whole, like, people walking out being like, do I really want to fucking burn my ass off in this kitchen so this psycho can have a political career? I don't think I want to do that anymore. And yeah, so these people, these restaurateurs like Lauren Boebert and stuff, are having to get into politics. But yeah, working class. Yeah, we're not
for working class. My ass, man. Well, on the other side of the spectrum, we have some very difficult news about a project that is bringing in members of the community here in Austin, Texas, to provide an educational experience that is second to none. So, unfortunately, hit a couple of hiccups. We're talking about the University of Austin, Barry Weiss's.
But Malcolm Gladwell just told me to, I should enroll in this, and I implicitly follow everything Malcolm Gladwell does because he's an expert on becoming an expert in stuff.
Malcolm Gladwell's like everybody's weird uncle's favorite writer. was out tweeting the other day that he thinks that liberal students should be enrolling in mass to go to the University of Austin so that they can get an education that challenges their deeply held beliefs. I hate to disappoint all of those young students and Malcolm Gladwell, but it looks like this shit is not happening because what I think a lot of people probably could have told these people getting into it, starting a university takes a lot of work, and it's not as easy of a grift as, I don't know, starting a Substack or forever being canceled.
I mean, I don't know about the universities you attended, David, but like the Minnesota State University, I don't know how NYU started. Maybe it was some rich people just deciding to get to it, but I assume there may be some state thing. But I know Minnesota State University, that was like the government, here's some land, go put a university there. Like, it's not, look at these crazy people with ideas that, and this is why
we need, like, to get them all in a room together.
Yeah, exactly. If we could only keep them, we need to keep them apart. That's where the distributed idea suppression complex comes in. But anyway, David, continue.
Let's get to this news first. And this is from Philosopher Foster. I don't know, Barry, but I think maybe should I pin this now. And these are some tweets from Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss saying, we got sick of complaining about how broken higher education is. So we decided to do something about it, announcing a new university dedicated to the fearless pursuit of truth, universityofaustin.org. I was like, when this first came out, my heart dropped. I was like, I can't have all these freaks being my neighbors. But again, as you start to look more and more into it, you realize none of these people are coming here. Thank the Lord.
Yep.
But here we go. Gordon Gee, or G, longtime college president and advisor to the University of Austin, distances himself from the organization's key claims. I do not agree other universities are no longer seeking the truth, nor do I feel that higher education is irreparably broken. Michael Powell, reporter of the New York Times, reports, University of Chicago Chancellor Robert Zimmer resigns from advisory board to fledgling University of Austin, saying the new university made a number of statements about higher education in general, largely quite critical, that diverged very significantly from my own views. And last but not least, Steven Pinker. By mutual and amicable agreement, I'm stepping off the board of advisors of University of Austin, hashtag UATX, wishing them well. I'm concentrating on rationality, the book, and think with Pinker, the BBC radio and podcast series, and won't be speaking on this further. And that, of course, is a screenshot, but it should be noted that this character, who is dedicated to defending free speech, muted any comments or replies on that announcement.
Well, that's what's so funny. And I've been, as somebody who's been blocked from Steven Pinker for a long time, you know, everybody welcome. That's what's so funny about the launch of this is, like, you immediately read it and you're like, wait a second, this is written as if, like, all these people are going to like leave their actual jobs at universities, right? Because it's really saying literally none of you are salvageable. We have to start our own. And I can't believe, like, Barry Weiss is so up her own ass to have done that, honestly. Like, this is a profound indictment of her competence that we're already seeing people like Pinker jump ship or, you know, get on a flight out of there. And, I mean, it's pretty delicious, but I'm also kind of shocked at how, like, this is what happens when, like, Barry's making a good amount of money from Substack, like, six figures. So, six, maybe seven figures. I can't remember what Axios said, but anyway, like that. With that, like, why do you need to start a new grift? Like, why do something that really just going to embarrass yourself? And I think, like, teach people that, hey, you know, a lot of the complaint that these people get, like the way people constantly complain about them, maybe there's something to that. Like, maybe these people are actually toxic, and it's beautiful to see, really.
Well, I mean, the irony about it initially is when they launched was noting how many people not only, you know, are in academia, but actually hold high roles at very prestigious universities around the country, right? And what you saw was this Texodius from all these people who, again, had no interest in coming to Austin in the first place. Much like shitheads like Elon Musk, by the way, you know, who's like barely in Austin at all. You know, like they wanted to use it as a kind of representation of an idea. And it's very frightening for me as somebody, you know, born here and who lives here, to see like the history and the kind of image that's being portrayed out to the rest of the country being written by people with a very passing interest in this city and this place, and you know first things first. But beyond that, the thing is, this is just like going to be Zoom seminar shit. And I think that the other people who I think might have been interested at first at receiving some kind of royalties from that process realized very quickly that the brand was too toxic and the kind of baseless attacks against universities across the country was going to make it very difficult for them to then spend time and socialize in those circles with people from, you know, major universities around the country.
Yeah, which is like not to defend those universities because frankly, a lot of like they're not. Like that, the idea that Harvard University or Yale, like these are woke institutions, and because they respond to like certain student protests occasionally, right? Like these are the like daycares of the people who the ruling class, the future ruling class, basically. And yeah, I don't know. It turns solid.
It happened
fast.
Quicker than I thought. I must say. I mean, they're definitely going to continue to push it. But again, as I'm saying, like, I think that the physical side of the one, it's not going to get accredited, right? So it's about as much of a university as, like, you know, there's a barbecue university around here where you can just join the Patreon and, like, get some barbecue tips, right? It's as much of a university as that. And frankly, you're going to get a much better education at the barbecue university than you are going to get at the University of Austin. Yeah. But
actually, you all listening to this have been enrolled in Left Reckoning University for a while, and we'll be doing parent teacher conferences. In the new year.
So. Yeah, it's coming up just in time for the holiday season. No, I mean, it's just the grift is too strong. The only thing I could think about that is like maybe a benefit is they found a way to get into the booming, awesome real estate market and grift a few people to, you know, finding ways to use their money to buy a property that I'm sure they'll be selling in a couple years. Yeah. Once, you know, the kind of building has just been sort of sitting there in central Austin for a couple of years empty. I mean, I know exactly where it is. I thought about driving by and recording it, but frankly, I can't like get myself too worked up or like spend too much effort on this project because, again, it's not even going to happen. The only reason it was a like passing interest to me was because I was worried that Barry Weiss was going to fucking come to Austin and I might have to potentially see her or at least see videos of her around here. And now I'm realizing that, nope, they're all going to stay up there. Thank God. Yeah. And we're full. Stay out.
And the entire the release, the press release, this same sort of like money-backed bullshit that you see in like Bitcoin or crypto-related stuff, which is like, let's trade on Elon Musk's name. Like, why Austin, Texas? Well, it's cool enough for Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. Like, that's a dead giveaway.
Two famous people from Austin.
Yeah.
You know, who have been here for maybe a collective of 10 months total. No, I mean, it's for sure it's a joke. I mean, let's check it out. Let's see what they're doing over there. Because this website is actually like surprisingly bad. I don't know if you've had time to look at it. oh, actually, we should read. Here we go. I haven't read this yet. Statement about Robert Zimmer and Steven Pinker. The University of Austin is just 1 week old and has thus far succeeded in generating huge public interest. And frankly, that's probably right, because that's think that's the only fucking goal of this organization is to get a lot of public attention.
That's why we didn't talk about it last week.
Yet, as is often the case with fast-moving startups, there were some missteps. In particular, our website initially failed to make clear the distinction between the founding trustees and the advisory board. Although we moved swiftly to correct this mistake, it conflated advisors who were aligned in general with the project but not necessarily in agreement with all its actions and statements, and those who had originated the project and bear responsibility for those things. Let's also be very clear here, not to like, you know, treat Epstein's like good buddy Pinker as some kind of luminary of academia. Yes, these are the people who had the credentials, at least in sort of running university programs, that were giving some legitimacy to this thing, other than it just sort of appearing to be, I don't know, Zoom seminars for losers.
Yeah, right? IDW like,
those were the things that sort of made it seem like maybe one day, the building could be covered in ivy itself, right? Anyway. This led to an unnecessary complications for several members of the advisory board, including Robert Zimmer and Steven Pinker, for which we are deeply sorry. We fully understand their decision to step down as advisors. The advisory board was never intended to be a corporate body that endorsed everything UTAX did or said. On the contrary, our goal in seeking advisors was precisely to have expert critics from a wide range of disciplines. Just fucking.
I'm sorry. What's so funny about this bullshit? Yes, exactly. What's so funny about this is like this was supposed to be like all other universities are bogged down by bullshit where you try not to step on people's toes, and it's like immediately you can't. This is amazing, like just bullshit, right? And like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we should continue a little bit. I'll read some more. Scroll down. This is just a great genre of writing I'm enjoying. So yeah. Is this where we're at?
Honestly, whoever does their copy is something else.
Okay, so where should I pick up at? The University of Austin, UATX, in case you want to use that as an abrev, was honored to have Robert Zimmer as an advisor. We will continue to admire his leadership at the University of Chicago. The University of Chicago and the Chicago principals. I don't know if this is regarding the Chicago School of Economics, but like let's just say that's what it is. He was so central to developing to remain one of UTX's lodestars. We were equally honored to have Steven Pinker as an advisor. He has helped us in many ways, from thinking more deeply. I like to think more deeply. Like I'm thinking, I need to think more deeply in the context of like I don't know. Pinker's trash. He has helped us in many ways, from thinking more deeply about the place of science and critical thinking in higher education, to improving our communication.
Do you think there's much space for like science education in between, you know, the phrenology section and the cancel culture lectures?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what brief Pinker wrote for Epstein, or was that Gladwell? I can't remember. I mean, all these guys. I think it was Pinker. Wrote some sort of defensive brief for it. Anyway. From thinking more deeply about the place of science and critical thinking, maybe you should critically think about the billionaires we're palling around with, apparently only for money purposes. and critically think about the place of philanthropy in society. We will continue to admire his contributions to academic and public life. Those are probably more significant and lucrative. As a scholar and public intellectual, we thank all advisors. I mean, that beautiful. Beautiful that they had to write that thing up and basically apologize for going over their skis with their alarmism about the university system being a degenerate, woke, you know, hellhole that can't, you know, seek truth anymore.
This shit's so goofy, man. It's just...
I also want to say this. And Barry's talking about, like, oh, tens of thousands of academics have gotten in touch. They want, like, a home there. First, that suggests to me more of a problem with the collapse of the academic system materially in being supported with funding and new positions for folks, more than it does, like, your university is so great. But I am fully, I fully believe that there are 10,000 academics that think Barry Weiss is a bullshit.
Look, I'm somebody with a, you know, humanities degree, and I think that, you know, there's too much, like, degradation of that field of study. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so what I'm saying is, like, the hard sciences are not the end all be all of academics. But I have to say, there is nothing that exposes how fraudulent this university is than this right here. The establishment of additional, like, the only programs that they're, first of all, they're not going to offer them, but I'm just saying, like, even in their, like, bullshit master plan, this is what they're saying. There's going to be a forbidden courses series, right, which is where they're going to take just angry kids from Pennsylvania, you know, away from visiting their mom and dad for the summer and come here to freak out, you know, for the summer. So, again, this is, like, you can come here and you can listen to Barry Weiss, you know, talk about how she tried to get professors fired at Columbia University, and how that was actually fighting for free speech. Then you will talk to somebody who discovered a way to grift a bunch of people out a shitload of money into coming to a fake university, and you will learn how to do the entrepreneurship and leadership MA program.
Bro, but entrepreneurship, like, from people who make, I think, certainly in some cases, valid critiques of, like, journalism school or stuff like that. Like, entrepreneurship, bro, go to the fucking golf course and meet the rich people.
Like, yeah, maybe that's probably better. Or, like, that guy who yells at people in their car, you know, how'd you make your money, right? That probably is going to be a better education than going to the loser school. But beyond this, the point I want to make about, you know, the sciences here is that there's going to be an MA in politics and applied history. Incredible.
Love
education
it.
And public service.
Yes.
And this last one, MA programs in technology, engineering, and mathematics launch TBD. It's common, boys and girls. Sooner or later, you're going to have people who want to teach you about mathematics and science. Sorry, that's not happening because the only people who want to teach there are kind of like failed journalists and essay. We're not even failed journalists and essayists who want to make more money than they already are from their grifty Substacks. I mean, it's a joke through and through. And I'm just saying, like, the failure, like, the lack of their ability to sort of bring in any other kind of programs to that roster, I think, sort of shows just how limited of a scope this whole university project. Frankly, like, can you even be a university if you're only offering subjects in one field, right? Isn't that just a college? You know, the point of a university is that it offers, like, the full breadth of fields of study, not just humanities done six different ways.
No, but one way you can make money out of this is by repeatedly talking about how you can make tax deductible donations to it now, and the people like Barry can draw a salary from that. But I actually have a technology master's degree, but I wonder if their technologies, technology one, will be the kind of critical analysis of technology that I had at New York University, which I actually was exposed to a lot of great stuff at, or if it's going to be like, technology is so great, let's learn just different types of ways to be enthusiastic about technology. But I do want to say this. It will be a great shame if we never see an output from this university, because I want all those people to get together and I want them to decide what is from them. I want them to be heard. I genuinely want to see the output from this shit, because it's going to be delicious. It's going to, it's going to be the same stuff that, like, you know, gets written in Quillette and, like, all these sorts of outlets, right? And I want to, like, I think for the good of everyone, it should be encouraged. But unfortunately, we can't. they can't really withstand making a clearinghouse like this for all of the dark web, right? You can't expose light to it like that much. So if, like, I think like this is going to be phantomware for before in, and we're not going to get anything really substantial. Well,
but the thing is like it also doesn't serve any like function even for like the ruling class and like conservative movement, right? Like, let me give you an example of this. You don't have to go outside of the city limits of Austin to see a school that is now being, you know, sort of overrun with, you know, conservative and free market ideology. You only have to look at the University of Texas, right? Which now has this huge grant to build an entire new school. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's going to focus on teaching free markets, classical liberalism, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Bullshit, conservative, reactionary ideology at one of the top universities in the world.
Right. Right.
Like, you don't need to create like a bullshit, like online school, you know, to do this work. There's already big money behind doing it at like seriously, at serious universities, which by the way are already accredited.
Right. Yeah. There's the Hoover Institution of Stanford. Like, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Right? And it's like, yeah, like that would have been the flex. And it was honestly what I was worried about when I was walking to work in the morning being like, oh shit, Austin. Like, I thought like, if they landed some shit with University of Austin, Texas, like the Longhorns, that's like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, and like you said, like it's already happened.
That was right? So duplicitous the way that they made it sound like, yeah, right. This is, yeah, like it was a part of the University of Texas at Austin. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I hope this is the last time we have to talk about it. I will say, like, when the big thing is like, one, this is not going to happen. And now my second hope is that it happens only online, because my big thing is like, I'm, you know, having to come to accept the fact that town's changing, people are moving here, and I'm happy to welcome folks as long as it doesn't just become a parade of idiots from the rest of the fucking country who are coming here not because of the people who are like from here or who live here and make this place a wonderful place to be, but just jackasses who have some kind of bizarre view of what Austin and Texas sort of represent, who are trying to make it their home to sort of to be angry at people from where they're actually from. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like,
I mean, the Elon, it's just, I wonder what Elon's polling at in Austin, and I wonder how that's going to change over time.
The thing is, like, everybody who I know, and even people who aren't very political, who I talk to, aren't the biggest fans. And his recent, like, foray into the local election when he was saying that like Austin shouldn't be like San Francisco. It's like, okay, fucking jack off billionaire from California telling everybody how they want to vote. I don't think did very well for him. But there are also a lot of Looney Tunes here who do think that like he sort of represents the, you know, the future. And like, you know, I mean, I see a lot of Teslas driving around. I don't ask those people how long they've been here, but I do see a lot of Teslas around town.
Right. Well, what's the sort of tech festival that's in Austin?
What, South by Southwest?
South by, yeah. I feel like that's like that's why, like that's sort of the, like the, that was the in for all these guys, right?
You know, and the thing is with South by, I mean, that we should.
And I thought it was kind of cool. Like,
to have somebody on, but like South by started out as like a music and like, you know, tech festival by, you know, by like interesting folks, you know, sort of. Austin has always sort of been a DIY city, you know, people sort of making something for themselves. And it's always been very future looking. Right. And it's always been very interested in technology and tech. And so it was a really cool thing. I wonder, I mean, the guys who started it are rolling in the dough now, but it is sort of funny. I was saying, like, you know, I wonder what, you know, if these guys hadn't come up with the idea to have a big festival here once a year, you know, if the city's history would have sort of turned out in the same way, because it really did. Introduced the city to a lot of people.
It's where Twitter was like announced, and I think a whole bunch.
Well, now it's like a joke. I mean, now it's like Times Square. I mean, I don't know. Like at first, it was like supposed to be a showcase for people who had interesting ideas to sort of get eyes on them. Right. And now it's just like the most powerful corporations in the world showing up here and flexing their muscle. Right? It's like who's more powerful than the other? So yeah, I mean that vibe has unfortunately just been completely beat up. By the way, I don't know. Bone to pick with, you know, delayed in Great Bourdain. I've always been frustrated by it. The only time he came here, like on his show, was for an episode where he did South By. He didn't eat at any, like, you know, really any, like, legit places here, but instead, like, partied with a band from California. I don't know. It's a bummer.
That is funny. I mean, see, that's the thing. It's like, that's like large city privilege speaking. Because as a North Dakota, I'd be like, oh my God, they showed like one establishing shot of North Dakota. I'm fine with whatever you did because we always made the.
Austin is a big city though. Right. Like sometimes people forget how big of a city it is. Frankly, I didn't realize how big of a city it was most of my life. But you know, it's funny. I mean, it's like, think about Real World was here.
Yeah.
That's where it was. The Pickup Artist was here. Ever watch that show on VH1 with that guy who wears like the big ass hat? You know what I'm talking about? Mystery.
Yeah. The Pickup Artist guys, right? Yeah. The game Neil Strauss, right? Yeah.
That was filmed here. Now there's another like Netflix show. That they're going to do, like, 8 millennials move to Austin. Like, what crazy things happen to them? So, I don't know. It's always sort of been, like, people have always wanted to come here and do funky shit. But I think the problem right now is not that it's, like, getting attention, but it's just, like, getting attention at a time when there's just such wealth inequality and a national housing crisis that it makes it a little scary. Well, before we get to questions, I don't know if we'll clip this, but I want to talk just briefly about Beto because I don't know. I feel like that's a big national story. People have their hopes up and, you know, it's early in the campaign. I have to say, I'm surprised it took him this long to announce, but the money machine's already rolling. In the first 2 days of his campaign, he raised $2 million. There's going to be a shitload of money in this, campaign between him and Abbott. I don't know if McConaughey is going to run or not. I think he probably was going to about 3 months ago, but I think he's sort of been embarrassed enough publicly that he might be rethinking it.
Why would he want to, man? Like, why?
I mean, he's a wild card. Right, like, okay. Like, I don't want to speak politically, but just like, I feel like he feels himself. And again, like, I hate this kind of political chapter of McConaughey's life just because, like, I'm a McConaughey, like, stan and fan. I love his stuff. I like the goofy things. I like the highbrow stuff. I mean, like, True Detective is one of my favorite shows of all time. Obviously, he's a legend and he represents a kind of vibe, of this town too that I do really like, but he unfortunately also represents a very kind of classic Austin like guy who's like, I'm a maverick, but essentially are just like a centrist, kind of like moderate Republican or Democrat. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I think it'd be a disaster if he runs, and it would make me sad because I don't want to have to like bash him publicly. But beyond that, like if he does run, that might make things very complicated. But I don't see like a path for victory for Beto, despite how unpopular Abbott is. And I'll tell you why. Beto, I was saying this to you, Matt, before. It's like he's a little bit difficult as like a Democrat candidate to talk about because he's different from like a Cuomo or like a Clinton or, you know, like a lot of these other kind of machine candidates. That doesn't mean he doesn't have an insane ego, but I actually think that like Beto is a pretty like earnest, like Gen X liberal.
Right.
And I think like, where he, yeah.
I was just going to say like compared to Buttigieg, who I think when he got the call from like Obama was like, yes, sir. Right away, sir. I'll endorse you, sir.
Yeah.
I think Beto would have like a bit of a Hamlet moment. Like, but I was here actually. I had this great speech tomorrow. I was going to give like that sort of thing. Right.
That's not necessarily even praise, by the way.
Yeah.
About him just being a kind of, I don't know, well-meaning Gen X liberal. I mean, I think that that's like a lot of the places where he's extremely wanting. When it comes to talking about working class issues and working class politics, aside from it just sort of being a backdrop to saying, well, I'm standing up for the little guy, but like actual material support of people, he's certainly lacking. But I just mean that because I don't think that some of the stuff that he does is like all cynical. That being said, I think that from what I'm already, so what I'm seeing in the campaign already is like, he loves being in the spotlight. He loves speaking to crowds. So he's going to do that kind of groundwork, right? Which frankly, that's like like that's good campaigning, and that will benefit him in the long run. But I will say that what it's looking like it's going to be a kind of recreation of a failed Democratic Party strategy, where they're sort of like attached to this idea demographics are destiny, attached to this idea that like larger urban populations, natural populations in the state are going to swing the state, in the Democrats' favor, and we haven't seen that be the case. Specifically when, like, there's a lot, like, Abbott is not popular. Abbott is a bad governor. Abbott does a lot of shit that people don't like. You know, the abortion ban is one of them. And I'm sure that Beto rightfully is going to hit him on that. And I'm sure that that will get, you know, win him some supporters. Beto's obsession with guns, I think, is going to hurt him. And I don't know. I think his kind of lack of vision when it comes to, workers' rights issues. We're not even rights issues, because that's like the kind of soft way that liberals talk about it. Yeah. Like class struggle, right? Like, yeah. Like the real fights that are going on in the state are between wealthy folks and working class people. And somebody like Beto, I think, is like sort of ill-equipped. I mean, somebody who's married into one of the wealthiest families in the country, to speak to those issues. So I think that there's going to be a lot of like symbolic moments in the Beto campaign. I think there's going to be a lot of him getting pink in the cheeks, saying, big boy stuff like I'm going to take your guns, without too much substance. But he's going to raise a shitload of money and he's going to get a lot of attention for it. And look, if it bruises Abbott a bit, I think that that's helpful. What worries me more than anything is that, people tie themselves too much to the Beto ship going into this next election here in Texas, where we desperately need to push back against a GOP stranglehold of the legislature. I don't know. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that, like, I will say this. I would prefer Beto to be the governor than Abbott. I think that that's sort of an easy call. I think that the frustrating moment, and, like, honestly, this isn't necessarily even Beto's fault. Nobody wanted to run. Nobody wanted to run. I think the disappointing moment here is that I don't see Beto O'Rourke being the future, not only of Texas, but of any kind of sustained challenge to GOP power. And people like him, they get some people's hopes up and they're very good at deflating them when it comes time to, show your work, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my impression. Like, he seems just like a money sponge for anti-gun sentiment. And, like, if you can win on, the abortion issue and being that out there on the gun issue in Texas, that will be news to me. And that will make me reassess some things if he is able to win this. But I, like you said, like, I don't really see
like
it
even on things like, healthcare, like Beto's Beto supports Medicaid expansion, which, people should check out. I retweeted it. Right. Luke Mayville, friend of the show, my teacher, up in Idaho, shared a story about how Medicaid expansion saved lives in Idaho, and it certainly would do that in Texas. And Beto talks about that, but it's not like make that the center of your there's some campaign tactics that I would definitely suggest to that movement. Talk about healthcare, talk about wages, talk about, come at like Abbott for the abortion law is not popular. The abortion thing here actually was much more about paying political favors and sort of responding to public will. So hit him on that. But also, there's a kind of delicate balance, I think, too, even in the cities, of people who are like from here and like think of this place as their home, who feel like they're being sort of pushed out and their way of life is being threatened. And I'm not talking about like politics or like, cultural, like struggles in the sense of like, human rights. I'm just talking about people saying like, feel like being a Texan, et cetera, sort of being sort of bulldozed over for this kind of generic American, experience. And I don't see a lot of Democrats actually being good at speaking to that real anxiety.
And well, that's what we're talking about with Jacob, really, too, almost. Like, right. Like, they just can't do it. Maybe you'll get one guy here or there, and it's good that in Louisiana it's a party chair. But, like, that's not a muscle that Democrats in America have been exercising.
I think so too. And like, and beyond that, like here, like Beto is going to get hit. I mean, I was showing Matt some of the attack ads on him already. He's going to get hit on Green New Deal. He's going to get hit on like being an AOC kind of like acolyte, right? He's going to be like attacked for being a supporter of like the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And it's like, well, at that point, you should run on those policies unapologetically. And like on the material side of them, not on the fucking, you know, performative side. And what I'm saying, what I feel more than not, we're going to get motions like for the already, you know, the people who are already in the church, he's going to be, you know, preaching to them and, you know, reading them the good word, without doing the evangelizing that is sort of necessary, you know, to bring people in.
Yeah, and I'm sure maybe he's addressed it already by now, but I feel like I can imagine him getting tripped up in square in the circle between, like, okay, you want tougher gun laws. How about the way those are enforced, particularly on, like, race and class lines? Yeah. And, like, again, like, that the gun thing, like, I just think, well, again, gun, like, I mean, maybe he could win this, but, like, that just, to me, that seems like it's a national fundraising issue and not, like, I want to win Texas issue.
The gun thing is like there's two sides. Like there's the side of people who are just like you can't touch guns at all, right? And that's actually is like a very small, I think, minority of even gun owners, right? That's like a political movement,
right?
And then there are people on the liberal side who are just like they just like the idea of guns like just makes them squeamish, right? So they're just like they would be fine with like you know a full out ban. I think where a lot of times like the gun control like advocates get tripped up is that you know a lot of like the actual policies that they put forward. You're trying to cast like a really wide net in ways that for people who understand these things as like tools and technology, it can be a little bit absurd. And I don't know, that gives them a lot of space. I'm saying the right wing a lot of space. Cause like, look, like permitless carry is nuts. Right. And I think most people think that, right. So yeah, come at that. But like, if you're going to start talking about banning very specific components and very specific weapons, you know, you better understand what it is that you're talking about. Yeah. And the fact is that from what I see from a lot of people on the liberal left who push that shit, they don't. And it just creates a great opportunity for folks. And honestly, like, I don't know, it's like for better or for worse, it's a part of a lot of people's culture and like sense of self. And you know, this is still a very dangerous part of the country too. I don't know.
Yeah.
We should maybe do a gun thing one day, more in depth than that. But yeah, I don't know. We'll watch. And we're certainly going to be reporting on Beto, but I just wanted to give our patrons a window into how I'm sort of reacting to that, that news story going forward. Well, let's get some questions unless you had.
No, let's do it.
Any little Beto things to add. Comrade Joe says, I propose we add to the Left Reckoning impression pantheon a character named Joe Rogaine, a podcaster turned comedian turned UFC fighter. He possesses Matt Leckian-esque flung locks and an obsession with the concept of peer review. If something hasn't fought its way through peer review FC, then he doesn't trust it. Today I had an epiphany. We've all seen the black and white thin a blank line fascist images flags with a blue, red, or green stripe. But now I just saw a car with one that had all three of those colors. A light bulb went off in my head, and I suddenly realized they are just closeted pride flags slowly revealing their colors one by one. Is the red one a fireman?
Is it like a blue lives blue and red?
So there's a thin blue line, and I think there's the red one.
Yeah.
Let me see, like the red.
There's the paramedics one that's like purple too. There's a whole bunch of different colors one.
Types. Yeah, no, the thin red line is the firefighters. And I support the thin red. I have seen some trucks recently, as Joe was saying, with like all three. I don't know what green is. Is green like paramedics?
I'm going to look those up right now.
I'm looking it up right now.
Okay, so gray is corrections.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Gray is corrections. Yellow is dispatch. Light blue is EMS. White is nurse. Shout out nurses. Firefighter, police. Red and blue. And then green is military.
Well, I will say, like, I'll put the thin red line flag on the back of my truck. Like, you know, firefighters are good folks.
Well, I mean, I'm actually fairly happy with the flag as it stands if it's just for firefighters and nurses.
Yeah, you're right.
We can leave corrections. I think we can leave corrections out of that one.
It's so funny, man. Yeah, it's a weird subculture, and like honestly, they'd gone on to something early, which was that like those flags look sort of cool and badass.
It's like look at it's the alternate logo. Right?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
exactly. Right? It's the alternate. It's the third team. Third team jersey.
Yeah.
Edwin says, David, what are your thoughts on the topic of land back? What it means and how it can be achieved in the U.S. So Matt and I did a video on this called "What Is Land Back and Why It's Not Scary." I mean, it's something that now is like in the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. and I think it's being thrown around by a few different groups. So I would definitely, encourage people to look at like Nick Estes' work on it. Because I do think that there is a kind of confused liberal left version of this that I don't know if it's particularly helpful to like the cause of like reintroducing like proper sovereignty for folks.
Right. Cause you see the way like decolonial, terms like that, get watered down.
Bezos is like already like throwing money around at certain decolonial groups right now. Yeah, exactly. I think people should watch those developments because I mean, just like defund and abolish the police, like some of those movements, unfortunately sort of got away from themselves. The second the Democratic Party started co-opting that shit, you knew it was done.
Yeah, yeah.
Defund just meant like a spiritual, like, awakening within like the police. Yeah, there's something else I wanted to say, but it escapes me right now. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that there are certainly some good conversations to be had. There's really smart people who are writing and working on it. I just think look at Microsoft and their like land acknowledgement shit that they've been doing.
So Canada, Canada does this too.
That, like certain groups have with like sort of evoking radical things that I think we need to start keeping our eyes on as they start to develop.
Yeah, yeah. Canada does like Trudeau will do a land acknowledgeement right before like sending a tar sands pipe right through like sacred land, right? Like so. But I think like on a, yeah, I would say like the Red Nation, Nick Estes. That's basically what to say about it.
Yeah. Matt, this is from Edwin. Matt, please, please, please tell me you have thoughts on the latest Grifter Roundtable. It's a real Who's Who special, Tim Cast, featuring Tim Pool, Joe Rogan, Blair White, and Alex Jones. You can't make this shit up.
I didn't watch it much beyond a clip I think Vic Berger may have, or the Serfs actually put up. It's tough for Alex Jones, and he wanted to commiserate with some friends. Like, he lost a defamation lawsuit for the Sandy Hook parents, or something like that. I don't know if it's defamation, but some sort of a charge. Yeah. And
he's in trouble.
Yeah, like, I think...
I wonder if he's going to have to sell his house.
Is his house like publicly viewable? Like,
I don't know if it's publicly viewable. The compound. I know where it is.
Oh yeah,
he lives in a very wealthy neighborhood.
Right, with all the other truth tellers.
Yeah, no, I think like more like people who work for IBM and shit, which is even funnier.
They've covered.
I don't know. I mean, Alex Jones is absolutely piggish. He's just like a personal fascination of mine. But I've always found it very funny to think of like Alex Jones having like, 180,000 a year, salary, income folks. And then like Alex Jones living next door to them, just like freaking out the neighborhood, has always been like a funny image to me.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is like, if it was just Alex Jones and Joe Rogan, even though I have severe problems with both those people, the coolness factor is there's at least something there.
Yeah.
And then you widen the aperture out on that in this Tim fucking Pool, and like you realize this is who Joe Rogan is sentencing himself to hang out with, is basically like lame reactionaries, like dweebs.
That is a shame.
And I think, there's only going to be more of that because You know, like Brett Weinstein, like really, Joe? That's who you want to hang out with? They used to know, like, and like, okay, there's a lot of comedians, and some of them are like, fine, let's still go on the show. But like, I don't know, man. You're going to hang out with like, yeah, I don't know, that British guy who's against immigration. Like, I don't know. Like, that's cool. That's modeling cool for a lot of, especially young men in this country. And it's impoverishing people's, I think, individuality a little bit.
I think so too. Right click Robin Hood, love the name. I've really loved the last two Sunday interviews diving into the specifics of South Carolina and Nebraska political economies. Thank you. The Blair Mountain interview was also a great highlight. Have you ever thought of doing a recurring segment or doing something like the reading series you used to do on TMBS that went into labor history in the United States more in depth? There's some great stuff in Prisoners of the American Dream by Mike Davis. Absolutely. Mm. Oh, this is great news. Coincidentally, the ebook will be free for Verso book readers December. And No Shortcuts by Jane McAlevey that I think would really help add some background to the coverage of our modern labor actions. I'll tell you one thing. I would love to get Mike Davis on the show. I will be completely honest. I'm very intimidated to send the email. But that book is absolutely phenomenal. Prisoners of the American Dream. I can't suggest that enough. The intention is to do that. I also think like sort of taking in these kind of like regional or like statewide snapshots can be something that can be fun. There's an intention to do that for sure.
Yeah.
And I'd love to have Jane on too. It's a similar thing. I always feel it's not even as much of I'm afraid that they're going to be mean to us. It's just like, I want them to feel like they're using their time well.
Yeah, no. I mean, and that's why, like, we appreciate folks helping this channel grow, because as we, like, gain, like, honestly, the subs on YouTube, one of the main reasons I like how we've been growing is because, you know, it when you can, like, at the end of TMBS, when, like, people like Zizek and Cornel West and Adolf Reed would be appreciative of our platform.
Yeah.
Right. Like that is like, you feel like you're actually contributing something and not just trying to get some clout. And
I agree.
Right. And it's a good feeling.
So yeah, definitely help us out there. Joe says, David, after reading Hubert Jolly's article, Putting Your Corporate Purpose to Work in the Harvard Business Review last week, I noticed something interesting. Sure, on its face, it appears to be your standard myopic word salad in which the executive class uses meaningless buzzwords to justify their place in society. It seems like he is genuinely upset that employees don't enthusiastically thank their betters for giving us purpose. It seems that he believes our labor isn't enough. Instead, we must love our executive masters and thank them for all they do. Otherwise, we are defective. Do you think this is a cry for help from an old man whose actions have cut him off from all forms of genuine human connection? Or is this an attempt to put off the time of pitchforks by making the working class better appreciate our exploitation, by making the mistake of applying human emotions or experiences to a soulless executive drone?
Hmm.
I mean, I'll tell you, the top line is, I mean, I can't do the psychoanalysis of the individual, but I mean, one of the things about we have like a human nature beyond like our economic system, and that most people want to be liked and loved and, you know, they want people to think of them as a good people and you know, their life has value. And that goes from, you know, working people to super rich folks. I think the difference there maybe is like, or the interesting thing is maybe less so that this person has those kind of similar emotions and more that this person has like an incredibly unwarranted platform to express those kind of emotions.
Yeah, right.
Right. Cause none of his employees are being invited to write op-eds about how they want to be appreciated or thought about.
Right. No, that's the thing is like, we didn't have the audio for it, but, or the video for it, but the video has emerged now of Howard Schultz telling to the Starbucks workers that want to unionize about this weird fucking metaphor of going to the gas chambers in the Holocaust and sharing a blanket, right? And that is like a human trying to connect to other humans, and thinking that like this is a righteous system, right? And he's so out to lunch that he doesn't really understand like that he's doing that. And I think like the, so like I fully buy that at a certain moment in time, their psychic states are going to be something that, you know, registers pain or whatever, right? The way like you can see fish register pain. But the problem is like their behavior over time is what's going to be like just pronounced, right? And like they might feel bad about it occasionally. Sometimes they're probably going to be fucking annoyed and be like, you motherfucking peasants, get back and like grind some beans. And like that's also going to be it. So like they're going to experience the range of emotions, but the through line is going to be like they own your ass and they need you to get to work.
Yeah. We have a few of these, so let's get into them. Dave from Jamaica, always good to hear from you. The de Klerk thing reminds of old joke. Why our grandparents are nice to grandkids? Because they are afraid of going to hell. Which I think is very true. I mean, I really should have had the video clip, but it's like, it's so manipulative, man, to sit here. And yeah, again, if you don't know, who's like, well, this old man just feels so bad about what happened in his history. And then it's like, what was the history? You know, it's just like the worst that you could ever fucking do. Dave also says, if Ben, I think talking about Shapiro, not our good friend, Burgess, if Ben is so smart, how come he can't figure out how to get his wife aroused? Just asking questions. Yeah, I mean, little Ben's got some issues. I think we're going to move on. Eakin says, I highly recommend the short but brilliant article by philosopher Ned Block titled How Heritability Misleads About Race, which picks up from Gould and absolutely decimates Herrnstein and Murray's racist nonsense. I was also in the gifted program in elementary middle school. I went to a public school that was very diverse, but almost all the gifted students were upper middle class white kids from the wealthier areas of the city. We would leave in the morning on Wednesdays and come back to class late afternoon. The students that weren't in the program and had spent the day in class were almost all black and Hispanic. That divide was almost exactly reified later with the AP, non-AP class split in high school. A very similar experience myself as well. I was like, it was weird for me too, because like all the other kids were the rich kids at school, and I don't know. There's like class was very felt as along with race, obviously where I was. Spencer in Utah says, professional educator here. Educators are trained to recognize exceptional students and to provide appropriately modified curriculum for them. This goes for both the students who are underperforming compared to their cohorts and those who are overperforming. Tiny Ben has no idea what happens in a classroom the same way he has no idea what to buy in a Home Depot.
Yeah.
Kowalski from Nebraska says, Just wanted to say I really enjoyed the interview on Sunday. Thank you for taking the time to hang out with us. That was really, really delightful. And everybody, we've just gotten nonstop praise for it. So thank you.
Love it.
You kind of something hard yourself. I hope I didn't sound too depressed. No, you're phenomenal. Yeah. I'm actually fairly optimistic given the amount of labor activity that's been occurring lately. And I feel like I didn't express that well enough. Just remember, folks, hope dies in isolation and optimism flourishes in a community. Solidarity.
No, I mean, you've had images of carbon sink vegetation floating down the Mississippi and greenhouses in the suburbs floating through my mind all week.
Dude, I actually dreamed about that. So, like, yeah, it's like it's deep into subconscious. So let's do it. JB Funk says, can y'all start a new part of the show called All Hat, No Cattle? And that's definitely a great name for a segment.
Yeah.
I like it. I definitely like that line. We have to think who to put in there. Not that it would be too hard. Umberto Ionian says, considering that politically switched off normies think that all politicians are liars, how is mendacity best weaponized against bad faith leaders to make lying a vulnerability?
Well, I mean, I'm thinking of like the way just technology has changed propaganda, in the sense of you can clip somebody's C-SPAN appearance from 1992 when they Right, like when Hillary said, "Where were you when we were doing healthcare?" And then you go back, and Bernie's like right behind Hillary in the '90s, like, "God, job, Hillary." How do we weaponize that? I mean, the problem is, I think Clippy Media and having an awareness of what has been said on the public record is the only way to do it. Like the bigger problem is like building structures that can do that, right? And we talk with all the explosion of Patreons and YouTube shows and stuff like that, that the media is hollowed out now. And so like in a certain way, like it's democratized and people can, you know, post that shit into the New York Times replies and it reach a new level, a new type of audience. But, you know, it's not sufficient to do, I think we see limitations to it, honestly.
Mm-hmm. I think that's on point. And like, I don't know, like, I don't know if there's going to be enough, like, as cynical as people rightfully are, there's all like, there's a reason they still do the, you know, exposing lies clips in political campaigns, because it works and most people don't like it. I think more than anything, we have to be able to create, like the flip flop thing as like necessarily a bad thing, somebody changing their mind, I think is actually more of a problem than people being too cynical about everyone being a liar.
Yeah.
Dylan says, what music has the crew been listening to recently?
I've got in, let's look at my Spotify likes.
Doesn't that come out soon?
I've been listening to like some old indie rock that I used to listen to, like 2011, like Mew, the band Mew. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Hell yeah.
You know, Caribou. Also a little bit of rap. Boozy Badass. I like the Wipe Me Down song because I learned the TikTok dance. And yeah, I don't know. But the thing is like my music listening, it's gone downhill. Like it's really, really not great from the about 10 years ago when I basically read as much music blogs as I did politics to now when I don't follow culture at all.
So, you know, this is something that I feel so left out about because I listen to a lot of music and I certainly have, I do listen to the Cocaine and Rhinestone podcast, which is a phenomenal country music podcast by David Allan Coe's son. And it's just, I think it's just a great podcast in general. Like I learned as much about country music. I learned as much about podcasting as I do about country music listening to it because he does such a great job at just sort of telling stories. But I have to say to get into like debates and criticism, I've never shared that or like,
oh yeah,
I don't know the entryway into that.
I didn't follow that stuff so much for like Pitchfork reviews or whatever, although I would glance at like what got like best new music or whatever, but like it was mainly just like blogs that would post MP3s of bands and stuff like that.
Oh, I get what you mean. Oh, like discovering cool stuff.
Yeah.
I got you.
And I just don't sample like that anymore at all.
No, I hear you. I mean, it's a weird time to discover. I mean, the nice thing is like, I'm seeing so many bands like just popping through like local bars and honky tonks around here that like I get exposed to it. I listen to the radio a lot since I'm driving. And we have some good stations here in Austin, which is not the case in most places, but I don't know, man, I've been listening to Flatland Cavalry a lot. Cody Jinks is like one of my like most favorite guys right now, mainly because he's like a good mix between, because I mainly listen to like old school country, like, you know, Waylon Jennings and things like that, but Cody Jinks is sort of like a close bridge, because I'm sorry, I do have the kind of like, I don't like a lot of modern country, but like if you get like roaring guitar and like that kind of like that very specific sound, like I do have like a positive reaction to it, and Cody Jinks is actually somebody who's like doing that kind of more heavy rock country guitar stuff that's a little bit more modern, but is actually like an interesting guy who doesn't write stupid songs. So I've been listening to that a lot. Dude, I've also been getting back into like Stevie Ray Vaughan a lot lately, and even Lynyrd Skynyrd. I watched the documentary on them on Netflix. It's actually pretty good.
Oh, nice.
David and Matt from Mad Hatter, not sure y'all have a Thanksgiving episode, so I'll ask this now. What are the worst political debates you've had over Thanksgiving?
That you shouldn't give preferential treatment to Indigenous people for scholarships. That's probably the toughest one. I don't know if that was in Thanksgiving or Christmas, but that's really the only one that I can really remember. It was me against like several people, and I just couldn't like bite my tongue and be like, "Are we? Come on! We're the entire fucking central like origin story of our family is the fucking homestead land we were just given by the government. All right, let's relax about people being allowed to take a fucking math class." But yeah,
I think for me it was Palestine.
See, I don't. Okay. Gosh, I mean, I don't think my family has much of a very developed thoughts about Israel Palestine, frankly. Except, I mean, maybe I don't. There's certain ones I wouldn't.
It's mainly a couple people than everybody, but yeah, that's probably the bigger one that I've had. Kowalski says, for left directing university, I teach Humble Pie 101, mandatory senior year, 12-hour days for 6 straight weeks, roughing fields with migrant workers. If this was mandatory at Harvard, the world would be a better place.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that.
J.B. Fung, I think this is not that they're innocent, but I think we can separate these folks from the Barry Weisses, but I'll read it. J.B. Funk says, Gray Zone will run the School of Journalism at the University of Austin. Tulsi Gabbard will lead the Aloha School of Foreign Policy. She sucks. No doubt about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was funny. Like, the ATX thing, like the Gray Zone comment, like, Greenwald was against the Austin, Texas, trolling them about the Palestine thing. Like, that's how, like yeah, I that's what I mean.
There's a whole, there's like, yeah. You know, you've ever been at like a workplace and, you know, people have like disagreements and they sort of just boil over like anything, but it always has to sort of like be mediated through maybe something that happens at work, right? But it's like really like y'all don't like each other.
Yeah.
Twitter's so bad for like journalists and people who do media because, like, it feels like the workplace for a lot of people, and they just have like completely, because I mean, these are just incoherent beasts for the most part, and I don't know. Shit sucks. But Tulsi, I have to say, I've gotten a lot of pleasure out of watching Tulsi just go full on Sean Hannity level. And like, the best part about it is like, if you want to watch the clip, I did it on the stream yesterday, but like the best part about it is like, she's not even doing it in a new way. She's doing like the old school, like same old, you know, warmed over, you know, budget freak out that Republicans have been doing for 30 years. Yep. So like, there's something very powerful actually about just like going all the way to the other side, but then also being extremely, extremely lazy and sort of carbon copy on it.
Yeah, you know, and that kind of looks back at the experiment of the last, like, 5-6 years, which is that the Republicans get total control of Congress and government, and you see the limitations of what they're doing. There's no wall. They weren't able to repeal Obamacare. They wanted to talk about it, right? And then the same thing happens with the Democrats, right? We're seeing how much is actually going to happen. I guess, knock on wood for the Build Back Better. And, you know, we'll maybe catch up with you later. But like, and you see, like, these are the guardrails of American politics right now. So far, you can go to appease your base.
Well, y'all, this has been a lot of fun. We'll see y'all on Sunday for a bonus episode. And next week, we'll be releasing our conversation with Lillian Chichurchia on Marxism and economic determinism. And we'll see y'all in the last week in November for the Left Reckoning will be 46.
46, baby.
Hell yeah. See y'all.
Peace out.